story, and it's a good one as well. Glad to hear that you're all good, Mr. Mel on the Wirral. We miss you when you're not calling us. Thank you for the belated happy birthday wishes. It's about 9 years late by my watch, but never mind. 08085909693 is my number. If you'd like to join in the banter, we're waiting for you.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 3 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will seek to brighten Labour's message when she gives a speech at the party's conference today. She'll promise a budget of real ambition and say her optimism for Britain is as strong as ever. There's continuing discontent about the decision to means test winter fuel payments, with a debate on the conference floor expected this afternoon. From the gathering in Liverpool, here's our political correspondent, Harry Farley.
Rachel Reeves will strike a marked shift in tone today from Labour's recent warnings about the state of the country. Writing in The Times ahead of her speech, she says she has never been more optimistic about our country's fortunes. As the party looks to move on from days of questions over donations and internal feuds, the Chancellor is expected to confirm a commissioner will investigate more than £600 million of COVID contracts awarded under the Conservatives. But there are also warnings of tough choices to come. One of those already made, the decision to cut the winter fuel allowance for most pensioners, is causing deep discontent among Labour's rank and file.
President Biden says the United States will do everything in its power to prevent a further escalation of conflict in the Middle East. Cross-border fire killed at least three people in Lebanon yesterday and forced thousands in northern Israel to seek shelter from incoming rockets. Our international editor, Jeremy Bowen, says the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, may resist US pressure.
I think he hears everything. It's a question of whether he agrees and whether he acts on that. And I think his record over the last year when it comes to advice from Joe Biden is that he's ignored it probably more often than he's accepted it in terms of the way that Israel wages its war.
Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in the US for talks about how he plans to end the war with Russia. He's expected to seek Joe Biden's permission to strike targets deeper inside Russia using Western-supplied long-range missiles. BBC News has learned that the number of times machetes, swords and so-called zombie knives have been logged by police has doubled over the last 5 years. 32 police forces in England and Wales released figures showing that large blades appeared in more than 14,000 logs last year, up from 7,000 in 2019. Donald Trump said he won't run for the White House again if he loses the presidential election in November. Speaking to the US news programme Full Measure yesterday, the 78-year-old said that would be it. In football, Manchester City and Arsenal drew 2-2 at the Etihad. John Stones scored the 98th minute to deliver the match. The City defender Kyle Walker wasn't happy about the way Arsenal played.
It's a great spectacle for the Premier League. Probably not so much certain stuff. But I think it's part and parcel of the game, and we'll say the dark arts.
Elsewhere, Nottingham Forest continued their unbeaten start to the season, drawing 2-2 with Brighton, and Celtic won 5-2 against Falkirk in the quarterfinals of the Scottish League Cup. BBC News, it's 3 minutes past three.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The Checkered Flag Podcast. Keeping you up to date with everything Formula One.
It has been utter dominance for Lando Norris, who wins the Singapore Grand Prix.
It was an amazing race. A few too many close calls. I'm a bit out of breath, but very fun one.
Next up, Austin, Texas, and an intense six-race sprint to the end of the year. The Checkered Flag Podcast. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
Dotun Adebayo. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Prime Minister at the Labour Party conference in Liverpool. Anne has texted me to simply state what she feels is the obvious, that Labour has lost the trust of the people already 2.5 months in to their time in government. They've lost the trust of the people. Is that the case? Has the Prime Minister lost your trust already? 08085909693. Talk to me about that. Speak to Phil in Penrith in Cumbria, and then we'll
Good morning, Dalton. I think this is the first time I've spoken to you, isn't it?
Is it the absolute first time you've spoken to me?
Yeah, I reckon. But you know what? If you play that tune, you're playing a German tune called Rosamunde.
Oh, am I? How'd you work that one?
It was banned. It was banned in the First World War.
Oh, I didn't know. What, roll out the barrel? Because
it was reintroduced to roll out the barrel. Originally, it was a German polka, and it was banned in 1914 because it was German.
Oh, my goodness. I generally didn't know it. But we'll come to that in just a moment. Let me just do the, you know, necessary.
Roll out the barrel. We'll have a barrel of fun.
I can hear it's an old polka. That's the first time I've thought of that. You're absolutely right. How did you know that?
I just take a great interest in old music. I love old English music hall and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the original German band in 1914 because of the war?
Yeah.
So was it banned by
anything,
us?
Anything German.
Right, so it was banned by us? Oh, I've got you. Okay. And then we rehabilitated it, but like always, we appropriated it and gave it a new name. So it was Rosamund Schenk.
Rosamunda. Yeah.
Okay. I've got that. Oh, my goodness. If I can find the original, I will play it. Or if I can find it in German, I will play it as well. I promise you.
All right.
But first of all, we've rolled out the barrel for you, so you're official now. Welcome to the nightclub.
Evening.
So, Labour, Anne was just saying there that Labour has already lost the trust of the great British public. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I've been disillusioned for a long time, but to hear them stand up at this conference and talk about housing in the way they're doing makes me want to throw up.
Why? What have they said?
They're talking about they're going to do this and they're going to do that, all these wonderful ideas they've got.
Yeah.
Where I come from in Manchester, it's a brownfield site, 30 acres of brownfield site that's been derelict for over 40 years, and it's 3 miles from the city centre.
Where's that?
And I think the local authority and developers are up to the armpit with it.
Which part of Manchester? Which part of Manchester is that?
It's a mile up the road from the city's ground, Clayton.
Oh, along there, yeah. Isn't that going to be developed, though? It's on the way to being developed.
I'll tell you what, after 40-odd years, it had better be. They've got no more excuses. They're building on the groundfield. They're building on the greenfield sites all round Manchester, and that's been 30 acres of land, 30 acres, 3 miles from the city centre, and it's been lying there derelict for over 40 years now while local authority play silly persons over it.
If that's the reason, but what are they playing silly persons over? Why that? Because the whole of Manchester has been rebuilt, much of Manchester has been rebuilt with all the tower blocks going up left, right and centre, right across Manchester. And I would argue that, you know, they've done a pretty decent job post the IRA bomb many decades ago now, a couple of decades ago or more. But why would you say that this brownfield site in particular has not been built upon?
I think it's political. I think now that Labour are in, they're going to try and... I hope they will do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they do, and they're going to beat their chest and say, aren't we wonderful? Yet for 40 years they've allowed it to lie derelict while people are begging for little places to live. I used to live in a little two-up, two-down terraced house with my mum and dad, and how they brought a family up there, I'll never know.
Well,
it was
full
of love.
Yeah,
fabulous mum and dad I had.
Those were the happiest days, weren't they? Those were the happiest days, you know, in small two-ups, two-downs and playing out on the streets because there's no room for the kids to play in the house. We used to play out on the streets as a result of that. In fact, the last time I saw kids playing out on the streets like that was in Manchester, funny enough. And, you know, somebody had their bicycle on the ground, flat on the ground. Others were playing hopscotch. There were girls and boys playing together on the road, you know, with no perceived threat or whatever it might be that stops kids playing on the road now. So there's still a little bit of that kind of way that we were that you talk about. There's still a little bit of that, isn't there?
I'd love to go home. I'd just love to go home. I'm desperate to go home. My wife's got Alzheimer's. We're desperate for a little place that we can manage. I'm 80 years of age. I've got a wife with Alzheimer's, and we're desperate for a little place, and I'd love to just go home.
And why can't you? What's stopping you?
Because it's 30 acres of brownfield site, yeah, been derelict for 40-odd years.
But never mind that, because you can't do anything about that, can you? It's above your pay grade. But why can't you go home and live anywhere else in Manchester?
I've got a passion. In my mind's eye, and you know that song, The Town I Love So Well?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in my mind's eye, this place is in my head. It might be like a mental illness with me, but I've got it in my head, and I just want to go home and to Clayton, where I come from, and I'd like to give. I'd like to be able to give of myself and what I've got in my old age.
That's a beautiful sentiment. I mean, genuinely, it is. The older you get, though, the more difficult it's going to be to do that, which is why if it was me in your situation, I don't know. I'm 15 years away from 80, but if it was me in that situation, I'd try and get home by hook or by crook, because I know, you know, the time's passing and passing and passing. It's going to become, you know, it's going to come to a point where you can't realise that dream and passion of yours unless you do it. You know, unless
did you
know,
in this suburb, Doughton,
yeah,
in Clayton, in Manchester, in this industrial suburb, mm, there's a 15th century, half-timbered, dry-moated hall in the middle of all that. Nobody knows about it.
Oh, right, you tell us about it then, please.
Sure, there's a place called Clayton Hall. It's in Clayton Park, next to the War Memorial, where I try and get, every November the 11th, I try and get back to Clayton, just to stand there. And in Clayton Park, there's this old hall, very old hall, that features in the history of the Civil War. It's called Clayton Hall in Clayton Park, and it really is worth seeing.
Look, it's a absolutely amazing story that you're telling us. In fact, I've got a picture of it right here in front of me as well now. For those who don't know the landscape, like you said, it's by the Etihad Stadium. And I suppose a lot of people now know the stadium, the Etihad, much more than they know Clayton Hall, not least because they're doing a lot of stuff around there. But Clayton Hall's beautiful, beautiful, like you say. Nobody knows about that.
Very few. It's a hidden gem. It's in the park. Clayton was a rough and tough industrial suburb. We all wore overalls and had clock cards and worked shift work, but they were fabulous people.
Do you know, I think I know a little bit about this, you know, because I think that there was... I could be wrong, because I'm pretty sure it was this park and this building as well as I see it now. I could be wrong, but I think some developers did try to go in and for whatever reason, you know, to go in league with the council, and it didn't work out. That's what I think. I'm pretty sure that I've got this right. I think happened. There was, obviously, because it's a listed building, what they were going to put something in the building, or they were going to turn it into something or other, but they had plans for the development of the area, and they were going to build some residential houses somewhere around that, and then they were going to refurbish this Clayton Hall as part of the deal that they had with the council. But I can't remember for life of me what happened. I'm pretty sure.
Well, I've followed it closely.
Yeah, well,
I've followed it closely.
You know it more than me then, in that case. And well, let's hope that something gets done. It needs a campaigner like you to push it along, to make sure that the councils don't have any excuses, to make sure that it's brought back to life and use as well. There's no point. I don't necessarily blame this government, but it might be, you know, the fault of this government. As far as I can see, Andy Burnham, who's the mayor of Manchester, as you know, he seems to be proactive, but then a lot of it might just be hype. You say what you got to say in front of the cameras and then don't get things done. I don't know. I'm not blaming him at all, but he seems to be a mayor that gets things done, but not in this case.
Well, 40 years it's been derelict, 30 acres of land, 3 miles from the city centre, no subsidence. It's just rotten. Something wrong.
Yeah, yeah, something's wrong. Is there? Did you see the bee statue as well? Is that connected to it? A statue of a bee or a wasp as well? Have you seen that?
Well, the bee was the emblem of my old school, Ducie Avenue, which has also been demolished.
Oh, mate, I know that feeling. My old school doesn't exist anymore. And in many ways, I think that's a good thing, to be honest, because me and my old school didn't see eye to eye. Let's just put it that way, unfortunately.
When I left, the headmaster sent me a letter thanking me for leaving.
Well, I didn't quite get the privilege of that. I got a letter sent to my old man telling me not to come back ever again. That was what I had. I mean, yeah, I got suspended and expelled, essentially. But here we go. Is it this one? Do you recognise this, mate?
That's the old German version.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's what I'm playing for you, because you're the only one who's twigged that. So instead of playing the other Roll Out the Barrel for you, I'm going to play the Rosamundo for you.
It sounds a bit right-wing, doesn't it?
Well, I dare not say it's German in wartime, but let's put that to one side. Maybe if it was the Second World War, we might be able to say that even more so. But every time you call, I'm going to try and play this one. So remind
all right,
me,
mate.
Phil. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for letting me talk, though.
No,
so
no, it's an absolute pleasure. Can I ask one quick question? One quick question. You're in Penrith in Cumbria, and I've been to Penrith, a lovely, nice town. You're in Penrith in Cumbria. Does anybody ever call it Penrich? You know, rather than Penrith.
Never heard of it.
Oh, I'm glad you said that, because one of our colleagues here doesn't know the difference between Penrith and Penrich, which is okay, but I just wondered if it had gone up market or something since I was last there.
It hasn't gone up market.
you seem definitive about that. Mate, look after yourself.
Thank you for letting me talk.
No, pleasure. Look after your missus. I wish you both well. Call up any time, you know, Phil.
Pardon?
Call up any time you want.
Thanks very much. It's good. Thank you very much.
Take care, Phil. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And also, isn't it wonderful that we've learned a little bit of history about our Rolling Out the Barrels? It's a German song from the First World War. The Germans? Yeah. Denise in Anglesey is with us. Then we'll speak to Linda in Hexham. Hello, Denise.
Guten Tag. Doesn't seem we're on the German thing. Guten Tag.
No, Linda in Hexham can do better than that. Linda, speak some German for us, will you please?
Rosa Munda, dee 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 dee.
See, she could not only speak German, she could sing it and all. So, me and Linda.
I bet when Rosa Munda changed to Roll Out the Barrel, the Germans were saying, das ist nicht gut.
And they could say, Musidin, Musidin, Zoom, Schleitenhaus, Schleitenhaus, cause I don't have a wooden heart. That's what me and Linda usually sing together. Yeah. Lots of German. Now that we started singing German, I'm only going to start off with 99 Luftballonge. Luftballonge, because luft means air.
We'll do some Kraftwerk instrumental, shall we?
Why not? Ba, 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 Autobahn. That was the one we all knew.
I wonder if that was originally German, the poem.
Sheep. You have to be careful how you sing that.
Sheep, you rang up anyway. Thank you, Dutton.
No, pleasure.
Are you well?
I'm well. But you've had to pinch yourself.
I'm not.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear
that.
Sorry to hear that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
But you've had to pinch yourself. For what?
Yes. When I had a car crash about 10 years ago, they had to cut me out, and when they carried me into the ambulance, I lay there and I literally thought, am I alive or have I died? You know, am I dreaming this? So, I didn't literally physically pinch myself, but, I felt that way.
I know, I can understand. Were there... would they... of course, they're wearing white, which makes you start wondering if you're going to see...
Angels, yeah, exactly.
At what point did you realise, no, this is real, and this could have been a lot worse?
When I got first in hospital and I couldn't have a cup of tea because I had to operate, and then I realised, I think, yeah, I am alive, I'm thirsty. It was all very confusing for me, yeah.
Yeah, but you were grateful that you were alive, yeah?
Grateful, yeah. I was, I imagine.
You see, those kind of near-death experiences are the ultimate pinch yourself because,
yes,
you know, you've somehow survived against sometimes all odds, you know, if they had to
the
cut you out.
Yeah. I wasn't meant to go meet Peter at the gates.
Exactly. St. Peter can wait. He can wait. Yes. Do you know that film, Heaven Can Wait? Do you remember that film?
Heaven Can Wait. I do.
The person goes...
We go there when it's decided. We have to wait.
The thing I can't help wondering is if, when we do get there, whether we're going to have to pinch ourselves before we realise that we're not alive anymore. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
You get to that gate and you're like...
I often wonder, they're going to throw me out and not allow me in.
Well, that, I will be at the back of the queue and all in the waiting line. But, you know...
You stood with me.
Imagine getting there. You know, imagine passing on to the next world or whatever it is that awaits us when none of us get out of here alive. Imagine getting there and thinking, no, I can't be dead. This can't be heaven.
No,
that bloke with the white beard can't be, or can he?
Do you know, that's how I picture God. I picture him.
Oh, no, like, I wasn't thinking about God.
White hair and white beard.
No, I wasn't thinking God when I said that bloke with the white hair. I was thinking St. Peter's. God, as we know...
Oh, no, I pictured him looking like Peter Waterman, you know.
Oh.
Will Nixie's desk at the pearly gates.
I picture him with dreadlocks, you see, and so I can't,
We all have our own idea.
Exactly.
We do.
And rather, I picture her with dreadlocks. You see what I did there?
Yes.
Very modern thinking kind of man.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Denise, okay, you pinch yourself. You are here with us now. I can guarantee that, unless I've been talking to myself for the last... Well, not to a ghost. I wouldn't talk to a ghost. But I might have been talking to myself for the last 10 minutes or so, but thankfully it's you. You are here with us on Terra Firme. Well done, Denise. Thank you very much for calling. Linda, Mosidin, Zuhun, I forgot that bit.
Wenn ich komm, wieder komm, kehr ich ein, mein Schatz, bei dir.
Wow.
There's no strings upon this love of mine. It was always you from the start. Treat me nice, treat me good, treat me like you really should. I'm made of wood, and I don't have a wooden heart.
I think Elvis Presley would have been proud of you. No, I do.
My voice isn't as good as it used to be, though.
Well, neither is mine. I mean, all our voices, we lose our top range the older we get, don't we?
Yeah.
And also, you know, in my case, I started out from a very, very low bass in terms of my voice, and I've gotten even lower than the bass I started out with, you know. It was bad enough, and now it's even worse, if you know what I mean. Do German kids sing that song? Do they sing it?
My German kids.
No, not necessarily yours, but German kids in general. Do they sing? Is that kind of a kiddie song?
Not so much now, I don't think.
I thought it was a bit archaic now, you know. Yeah. But how about the 99 Luftballonge?
That's sung a lot.
Yeah, do you know how to sing that? Can you sing it in German?
No.
Yeah.
99 Luftballons.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it's as good in German, which is the original language, as it is in translation. I'm not sure if it's as good in German, or maybe that's just to us. For the Germans, maybe they laugh their heads off when we're singing 99 red balloons. They're like, oh, that is very funny. It's supposed to be 99 Luftballon. You know, do they do that kind of thing with it? Do you miss speaking in German? Do you miss it?
Well, Linda? I speak it nearly every day because I speak to my children.
Oh, and they don't speak English?
They don't speak German. What was it? Just talk it as it comes out, sort of, what they'd say in German, a Kauderwelsch. It means like double Dutch, is it? Or what? I don't know.
Sure. And
half. You know, just as it comes. If they can't think of the word in English, they'll say in German.
Do they regard themselves as German rather than British, then?
No, but they both they are.
Yeah.
Because I'm English.
Yes.
And their father's German.
Sure. But I was just wondering if they had to choose one or the other, like if they had to play for England or Germany in the World Cup, who would they choose? Think?
Oh, I suppose they'd probably German.
Well, Germans are more likely to win the World Cup, so are they just going for the glory, or is it deep felt?
I've got three boys. I mean, I really don't know what, you know, if they would. I'm sure that they'd play for Germany, though.
Yeah, see, I can't understand that, because there's a German player, young player, just out of his teens, he's about 22 now. Musa, what is it? Musa Jamalaya? Oh gosh, his name slipped my. Musa. Everybody will know. Musa Jamial. Plays for Bayern Munich. Anyway, he could have played for England.
Right.
And he chose Germany.
He did.
And I just thought, whoa. You know, what choice to make? If you've had to choose between Germany...
Does he live in Germany then?
He does now. Yeah, he plays for the German team and everything. But, you know, come on, you've got to play for England, haven't
you? I've got my son coming over.
Okay.
In 4 weeks'
Jamal
time.
Musiala is what I'm thinking about. Jamal Musiala. Why couldn't I remember that? I say Musa Jamiliala. I was doing it the other way around. Jamal Musiala. Sorry to cut you there.
No,
go ahead,
no problem.
Linda. You were saying you've got your son coming over.
My son coming over and his wife... And my grandson.
Well, I hope that you'll have a great family reunion.
And we're going to go along. And what was it? I was hoping to get to see Denise. What was it in Anglesey? Because I'm going to my photographers go get us going open plans to go go go.
Well, you can just ask for Denise in Anglesey. I'm sure people will point you right there.
But
Anglesey's so small.
What I wanted to talk about. Is the time that I got felt like I was had to pinch myself.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, it was 5 months ago. I went to go and see Tony Blackburn in the City Hall. It was on the 23rd of April.
Yeah.
And I made up a bag of goodies for him.
Yeah.
It was like a wine chalice with Bancastle on it, and it's with little gemstones on it.
Wow!
And I got like these three little bottles of bubbly from Germany, and a tea towel with music, and a CD of mine as well. I put it all in the bag, and I didn't think anything of it. I just gave it to one of the security men to give to him.
Yeah.
And I was in the right up the back of the hall, in right in the back seat sort of thing. And he called my name out because I put a card in there and said, Linda from Barrisford.
Oh, my goodness.
And, and he says, is Linda from Barrisford there? And I thought, oh, dear, he's called my name out. A couple of times I asked, where's Linda from Barrisford? Well, it took me a long time to get down all the steps and up towards the stage. And I got down there and he says, I've got something in my pocket for Linda. And and then he pulled out a nearly gold medallion with 60 years sounds of the 60.
Oh, he's got that in his back pocket and all. That Tony Blackburn, I know him well. Oh, I did. I haven't seen him for a while. Linda in Exham, thank you for your pinch-yourself moment. And now we've been asking you for your reunion stories this morning, as earlier this happened on my show across England.
Good evening, Dustin. How are you?
I'm very well. I should explain to people how we know each other.
If you all know, be great. Yes, please.
Yeah, you and I were neighbours. We lived literally two doors apart, yeah?
That's right, yes.
And we haven't spoken for over 20 years.
Absolutely, that's true, yes.
That is absolutely amazing. First of all, tell me, was this just coincidence that you happened upon me on the radio?
We are driving on the M1, not driving, so I could safely talk to you. We just dropped our daughter to uni, and we turned the TV to keep us, you know, going through the elements. And then we heard your voice, and I'm like, I know this voice. I know it. And then that's how I realized who you are. And we were just thrilled to hear you. And because you brought the subject about how we climb mountains, I just want to say that you climbed the mountain first, the mountain of bravery. Because while we were neighbor, we managed to, you know, after moving there and being a young couple coming from abroad, we decided to take a holiday with our new baby. And while we were on holiday, burglars were walking in our house and were about to clear it out with our little belongings. And you were passing by because you took your little lovely daughter. At that time, she was probably less than 2 years. You were just going for a stroll. And you were brave enough to chase them. And thanks to you, our house was safe.
I remember.
We never, never forgot that.
I remember this story so well. Let me just say, your daughter, your firstborn, was my oldest daughter's first friend in life.
Absolutely. Yeah? Yes, that's right.
That's Yasmin, was it? Your older daughter's Yasmin.
Memory. Yes.
Of course I do. And your son who came next was Omar, who was too young for me to remember so well because
that's
we'd already moved from there. The story was, it was a sunny afternoon and we lived in these small Barrett-style houses, semi-detached essentially. And I was walking my daughter to her childminder. There's nobody else on the street. And as I passed the gap between your house and the house next door, I saw somebody in what would have been the gate to your garden. And as soon as they saw me, they went back in. I thought, oh, that's odd, because even though we barely knew each other, you had said to us, as a matter of courtesy, oh, we're away on holiday for a few weeks. So I thought, that's a bit odd that there's somebody there. I thought you'd said that you were away on holiday. And so I walked down towards the gate in between the gap between the houses, and I opened the gate and I literally saw every single thing in your house packed and waiting to be stolen.
To be clear, yes.
But look, and bear with me, because the story gets even more remarkable as I think you know what happened when you came back from holiday.
There was another burglar.
We thought there was a burglar. There was another burglar. But yeah, there was another burglar, but it wasn't. They weren't robbing your house this time. We obviously were living in a high crime area. So
but you are braver because you save everything. You know, we were abroad and the police had to call us and we had to shorten our holiday to come back because we didn't have the money to pay for an alarm or anything. So if it was not up to you, we would have come back to an empty house.
I would ask one thing of you. Because the moment I saw your name up on my screen, I called my wife to tell her, listen to the radio right.
Give her our love, please. Oh, say hello to Carol, please.
Better than that, with your permission, may I take your phone number?
Yes,
we've got it, so you don't need to tell me on air. We've got it.
And do call
I will do. Oh my goodness! You don't know how emotional I am.
Oh, believe me, we are too. Because, like I said, we turn the radio and we hear your voice, and you're keeping us going.
Yeah, that's what happened to me earlier yesterday evening. I do want to tell you the punchline of the story because you haven't heard the best bit, the funniest bit of the story. Those of you who were listening to me earlier will know what it is by now, but I will tell you, and I'm going to find the time to tell you the punchline because it is worth listening for. That was my neighbour from over 20 years ago. It's like 23 years, over 23 years since I saw her. And then she just heard my voice on the radio out of the blue and called me up. And it was quite emotional at the time. I'm over the emotional bit by now, but it's left me in a really good mood with a smile on my face. Great to hear that somebody that you haven't seen that long is well, and their family's strong and whatnot. And then you remember the story. That's what we've been trying to sort of expand on this morning when I've been asking you about your reunion stories. Look, I will try my best straight after the news to tell you the punchline. It is worth waiting to hear. It's 3:35.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, BBC News on 5 Live. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will seek to brighten Labour's message when she gives a speech at the party's conference today. She will promise a budget of real ambition and say her optimism for Britain is as strong as ever. There's continuing discontent about the decision to means test winter fuel payments, with a debate on the conference floor expected this afternoon. Ukraine's President Zelensky has arrived in the US for talks about how he plans to end the war with Russia. He's expected to seek Joe Biden permission to strike targets deeper inside Russia using Western-supplied long-range missiles. And Donald Trump has said that he won't run for the White House again if he loses the presidential election in November. Speaking to the US news program Full Measure yesterday, the 78-year-old said that would be it. Five Live Sport now, here's Andy Barwell.
It turned out to be a real battle between two great Premier League title rivals at the Etihad Stadium. Manchester City and Arsenal drew 2-2 with drama right up until the end of the game, as the BBC's football correspondent John Murray reports.
Last season's top two remained unbeaten this season after an epic in the Manchester rain, with City only avoiding their first home defeat for almost 2 years with a dramatic equaliser from substitute John Stones in the 8th minute of added time. In an incident-packed first half, Erling Haaland shocked the champions into an early lead with his 100th City goal, but then they lost the mighty Rodri to injury, were incensed as Calafiori equalised on his Arsenal full debut after a quickly taken free kick, and then found themselves behind as Gabriel headed in Arsenal's second goal from a corner. Before the break, there was more drama as Arsenal's Trossard was sent off after kicking the ball away, which resulted in a second half of relentless City attack against Arsenal defence, with their resistance only broken right at the end of a truly breathless occasion.
Brighton drew 2-2 with Nottingham Forest. Both managers there were sent off late on in the game, along with the Forest player Morgan Gibbs-White. After Celtic's 5-2 victory over Falkirk in the Scottish League Cup, the Old Firm have been kept apart in the semi-finals. Celtic will take on Aberdeen, Motherwell will play Rangers. Vivian Miedema scored one goal and made another on her return to the Emirates Stadium. Manchester City drew 2-2 with their former club Arsenal in their Women's Super League opener. And Celtic beat their Ukrainian opponents 1-0 in the first leg of the Women's Champions League qualifier. The return is on Thursday, with the winner going through to the group stages. After the victory for McLaren's Lando Norris in the Singapore Grand Prix, Max Verstappen's lead in the F1 Drivers' Championship is down to 52 points with 6 races to go. The American Billy Horschel claimed the European Tour's PGA Championship title at Wentworth for the second time in 4 years. And they'll try again at Trent Bridge today for cricket's 50-over one-day cup final, with Somerset facing Glamorgan.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV licence uni.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
This is our wee part of the United Kingdom.
Live from here at Old Trafford.
I think it needs a massive overhaul.
Dalton Adebayo. Listen on BBC Science.
So there I was. I've managed to save my neighbour's belongings from being burglarised. And then they come back from holiday and they come to my house to thank us for stopping the house being burgled. And we had one of these like bay windows kind of thing in our living room. And so my neighbour, who you heard from there, Rabia, she's sitting in the bay window and she's looking out of, you know, to the left where their house is. And suddenly she shouts out, "Oh my God, they're back." So her husband, who's about 6'4", a former police officer in the German police force, rushes out of the living room, and I rush out after him. I don't know what we're going to find. And basically what had happened was some other young lout from the neighbourhood had burglarised the house on the other side, on the road next to it, you know, that our gardens backed onto each other. And he had jumped over the gardens with his stereo in his hand. That's what Rabia had seen. So me and her husband rush up and we catch the person jumping over the fence, trying to jump back over their fence. And her husband grabs a guy by the legs and, you know, me with him, we drag him down from jumping over the fence and escaping. And guess what? It's a copper. He's a policeman. No, the boy had gotten away with the stereo, and then a policeman happened to be walking down the road, local policeman, in the days when they did walk down the road, to tell our neighbours how to make their house, their home safe after the burglary, yeah? And he saw this boy coming out with this stereo, so he ran after the boy, and he'd got as far as my neighbour's fence, garden fence, and we dragged him back down. Because we couldn't see, because it was so sun, the sun was shining strong up ahead. So all we saw was the legs, but when we looked up, we couldn't see it was a copper. It's a true story. That's how it happened. It was funny, hilarious. We can laugh about it now. Anyway, this is The Nightclub on BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm your night watchman, Dotton. And it's time to look at the headlines that you'll be waking up to this morning. I've been going through the front pages with freelance journalist Harry Merrill.
In the Metro today, and it says that red flags at Labour conference is the biggest story of the day, because obviously in the midst of the scandal with the gifts that the Labour leader, Keir Starmer, Deputy Leader Angela Rayner and Chancellor Rachel Reeves have all taken. Clearly, it's not how the party wanted to start their conference in Liverpool yesterday, as Rachel Reeves is due to take to the stage today. It goes further as Angela Rayner has been in the Daily Mail. There was reports that she'd spent £68,000 on a, quote, vanity photographer. If the party wants to boost their image, then we will sort of hope that it will be done in the announcements that Rachel Reeves will be making today. But clearly, it's not the best publicity the party would want, as it seems to be the story of the conference so far, and possibly even the whole conference in its entirety. We're only in day number two.
Yeah, indeed. And it's important that you made the distinction between the metaphor of red flags and real red flags. Because at first I was going to say red flags at a Labour conference. That's not news. It's like saying red, white and blue flags at a Tory conference. That's not news.
No.
That's what you'd expect. So the red flags are being used as a metaphor here for the pitfalls, perhaps, that await the Prime Minister when he gets up on stage and makes his big speech during the week, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's red flags, not, as you said, for the Labour flags, but also red flags that we can see as journalists looking on, and also members of the public looking on, but also red flags for taxpayers as well, because last time we spoke, there was this Keir Starmer speaking in the Downing Street Garden, sort of buttering us up for the October budget. And with Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, making the announcement tomorrow, we're going to have somewhat of a clearer understanding of what is going to be in that budget. But Reeves has been urged in the Eye, the headline they've run with is that Reeves has been urged not to return to austerity as Labour faces a winter fuel revolt by the trade unions. So clearly, it doesn't seem to be whatever, with all this buttering up and everything, it still seems to be red flags, not just for the party's PR, but also for the taxpayers going into the next, into the budget next month.
And what I love about this headline is, of course, the Labour Party will sing the red flag, the, you know, communist anthem, if you like, or the socialist anthem at the end of the party. You know, they hold hands and start singing the red flag, as it were. So it's very accurate. There will be a red flag sung at this Labour Party conference, but the other red flags, the metaphoric red flags, pose a huge problem for the Chancellor, for the Deputy Prime Minister Angela Rayner, Chancellor Rachel Reeves, and for the Prime Minister ultimately, because the red flag, as I read it now, from what you're saying, as I read it now, the red flag should be a warning to the Prime Minister that the other bits of policy that he may want to discuss are clearly not the subject that the subjects that are being discussed, like you say, at the moment. So I wonder whether he'll get any policy out in this conference. And remember last week when people were saying, who's in control if your chief of staff earns more money than you, Sue Gray earns more money than you, and Keir Starmer said, no, I'm in charge, I'm in control. Well, it doesn't seem as if he'll be in control of the agenda at this party conference. That's the red flag that I'm seeing.
Well, I'd like to add with last week's discussion is I'm a Manchester United fan, and I thought of an analogy, sort of like Cristiano Ronaldo is the biggest name in football. And when he was playing for United with his blonde locks, he was earning thousands of pounds a week. But yet Sir Alex Ferguson, who was earning an awful lot less, was still controlling everything on the pitch and off the pitch as well. So although that someone may be having a bigger paycheck than someone or other, you would hope anyway, like we've seen with Sir Alex Ferguson and Ronaldo, that it's that Sir Alex, or in this case, Sir Keir Starmer, is still pulling the strings. It's not really the best thing that you want to be waking up to on a Monday morning, especially when you've got thousands of people heading over to Liverpool for this conference. It's not really starting as you mean to go off. So it's, because all we're going to see is the honeymoon period is definitely over for him. And we're not going, he would want to use this as a chance to sort of, in his manifesto, he was saying change, change, change. But at the moment, the rhetoric doesn't seem to be changing with government. And as in every time we open or look at the front pages, there's a scandal or there's something away from legislature. It's always to do with something on the benches or behind the scenes. And this would have been a chance, or he would still hope be a chance for him to outline all of the work that the party's been doing, moving forward since the election win. But clearly it doesn't seem to be the case, especially when, even though Arsenal have had the draw with Manchester City today, there still seems to be ongoing discussions about should he be taking the gift of a hospitality ticket. It's not really what, as a Prime Minister, you'd want to be discussed on Radio 5 Live or in the morning papers. But unfortunately, it just seems to be the case. And hopefully we can, looking at Rachel Reeves' announcement tomorrow, we'll have a better understanding of what is actually going to be in that budget. But if I'm honest, I still think that this is the story of the conference. And as I've said, it's only 2 days in, and the story of the conference is arguably happened beforehand. It's not a great look for the Labour Party.
Oi, don't bring in your noisy neighbours into this, because at least they managed to score one and even two goals against Arsenal, albeit a draw, whereas you lot never even managed to put one past Crystal Palace yesterday, or Saturday as it is now.
We did get seven past Barnsley, though, midweek.
Yeah, but that's... Come on now, you're not seriously bringing Barnsley, seven past Barnsley, into a conversation which has up until now been about the Premier League. I mean, it's like It's like the Prime Minister saying, "Well, I did get some free Marks and Spencer's shirts from a donor." You know, come on, that's not the level we're talking about, Harry. Why'd you have to bring that in, poor old Barnsley?
As a United fan, you've got to cling on to those small victories. And if I'm honest, we could have put at least one past Crystal Palace the other day, but unfortunately, it just doesn't seem to be United's way in the Premier League.
Yeah, welcome to the real world. And by the way, all the rest of us are not, you know, enjoying it for no reason. But as you're a Manchester United fan, I will not rub it in any more than that. But it is a good analogy, like you say. So the Prime Minister is Sir Alex Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the most successful manager in Britain, certainly in the last 30 years or so. The Prime Minister is Sir Alex Ferguson.
I would say in this analogy, yes. I don't think he's quite proven himself to that level yet.
Sure, but let's keep it to this.
In terms of pay packets, you'd see that.
Let's keep it to this analogy. How does he, you know, how would Sir Alex Ferguson dig himself out of the kind of hole that you've described that Sir Keir Starmer is in, whereby, you know, he wants to talk about one thing, his party conference, but everybody else wants to talk about free Arsenal tickets or, whatever else it might be connected to the subject of quote-unquote sleaze in the Labour Party?
Well, you'd want to see performance on the pitch, at least a bare minimum, some ball going in the back of the net. You might not necessarily get a win, but you want to see some change. Mm. And it's you'd hope that that with Rachel Reeves' announcement, that we will see the play beforehand into the final third. Whether the ball go in the back of the net is another thing, but it doesn't really help them the fact that there is reports that there's going to be a revolt by the trade unions against the winter fuel cuts. So again, it just seems to be everything is stacking against them in terms of trying to show that we are moving in the right direction, we are implementing change, things are, I keep coming back to this word change, because that was the word they stuck through all the way through the campaign, was change, change, change. But yet nothing seems to actually have changed, but it seems that they've received an awful lot of gifts instead. So it's,
You are very good at this football analogy thing. So you've won that little game between us, a little, you know, just a friendly game between us. You've definitely won. I can't match that. But the I newspaper can match it. Its headline that you've just touched on, Reeves urged not to return to austerity as Labour faces winter fuel revolt. And if that revolt is being led by the trade unions, it's going to be a hard one for the Prime Minister to duck out of. It's going to be very difficult. They say here in the I, and this is in their subtext, Chancellor's colleagues caution her not to allow UK public spending to return to austerity era. That's the last thing she's going to want to do on top of, you know, the winter fuel revolt, to say, oh yeah, and the rest of you, even though you're not necessarily pensioners who are going to struggle through the winter, but are going to make it equally hard for you as well. That's good advice, isn't it? Come up with something a little bit more cheerful for people, not to concentrate so much on the revolt, surely.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult thing for being the head of PR at the Labour at the moment. It's just trying to spin every little bit out that you can. And I did see on the 10 o'clock news today that there was one of the big focuses of the campaign at the moment is the victory mugs that they're selling at the conference to remind everybody that it's been 15 years since Labour are last in charge. And there is something to cheers to. If there isn't anything to cheers to yet, there is certainly something you can cheers with if you pick up one of those mugs from the conference if you're over in Liverpool over the next few days.
Yeah, they'll be giving them out for free by the end of the conference, so maybe that's when we should advise people to stand outside, you know, cap in hand for a mug, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it could be, not a bloodbath, I think it's too far to take it, but this could be the equivalent of civil war within the ranks over a policy that nobody asked for, nobody knew was coming, and has proved to be genuinely unpopular. Is this conference, could it be? And this is kind of what the I is saying when they're saying, you know, ministers braced for embarrassing conference defeat by unions over cut to winter fuel payments. I wonder if the cut to winter fuel payments at this conference could be his Waterloo. That's getting a bit too far, isn't it? But do you know what I mean?
It's things has definitely started to stack up against them. I'm not quite sure at a Waterloo moment yet. I quite like in the subtext of the eye as well, there's a quote from Tracy Brabin, who is the Labour's mayor in the West Midlands. She said, "We've been here before. We've seen this movie. Austerity doesn't grow the economy." And we can sort of see that we're sort of at the start of the Star Wars trilogy for Keir Starmer. The first three, at first, nobody really liked them when The Phantom Menace came out. By the time we got to Revenge of the Sith, everybody was back on board. And we've obviously still got the classics at the end, but it just takes time for that character development to come through. It doesn't help the fact that he's got some brand new spectacles, which we were gifted to him, and he's in getting all of these gifts and that. But hopefully what we can see, not only just at this conference, but also with the budget in October and in the chamber itself, is we can see changes and we let him and his character grow. Because at the moment we've still got the aftermath of the Conservatives 15 years. I'm not trying to use that as justification for this policy, because in the Mirror, they've been talking of Labour's war on tax cheats as they're looking to implement taxes elsewhere. So there are other measures on the way. It just seems to be that this one is clearly the fuel cuts have come on a bad taste, to be honest.
Yeah, although we've been here before as well, and I do love your Star Wars analogy. I mean, you are amazing at this, you know, which is kind of like newspaper review bingo. So it's another bingo to you, I'm afraid. But I do wonder, though, whether in terms of blaming the previous governments since you were last in power on everything that's going on, that when Tony Blair came to power, which is what was it, 97 he came to power, wasn't it? When he came to power in 97, Labour had years and years and years of Tory government to blame everything on. But what happened was that after about, you know, a few months, people had forgotten the years and years and years prior to Tony Blair. It was John Major, of course. People had forgotten all that they'd done. You know, you couldn't use it anymore. And I fear that this is an exact reflection of that, that already, you know, I mean, apart from the pandemic, do people even remember who Rishi Sunak is? Barely, maybe, but can they remember any of his policies? And apart from crashing the economy, does anybody remember what Liz Truss's policies were? Do you know what I mean? Even Boris Johnson, it's only the sort of headline things that you can't avoid, like him getting COVID or whatever. Apart from that, oh, and of course, a couple of headlines about the referendum before that. Not least about how much money that we'd save and use for the NHS. Apart from that, does anybody really remember? Do you know what I mean?
It's getting to that. It's very much when at the start of the, when we looked at the last papers and it was, this sort of, it's buttering us up. It was all focused on the Conservatives. It's getting to the point now where they just can't do that as much anymore, because then it just becomes a blame game. We have a very short confidence span in an individual. It just seems as though that this honeymoon, I don't really think he ever had a honeymoon period, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be now, especially with all of this, with the conference and everything that's coming out at the moment, it just seems to be negative upon negative upon negative. And you can't, and although they've been saying that these gifts have been part of political life for decades beforehand, there's also, if you're accepting things, you've also got to think what this shows externally. Although you could be good friends and this, that, and the other, what you've got to think is what implications does this have? And you can't, it's like he's blaming it again. It's this blame game. There needs to be a point, like now where they're saying they've said that we're not going to accept any more clothes. That's a good thing. But it's like, why has it got to this point for it to be on the front pages, for it to actually be acknowledged that perhaps taking gifts from external parties isn't quite such a good idea in politics? It's an awkward time for them, certainly.
You say that again. Harry Morell there, freelance journalist, and decent one at that as well. It's been a fascinating nightclub tonight with all your calls on the subjects you were talking about, as well as giving advice to the Prime Minister. Yeah, we're not getting paid his wages, though, for the advice, you get me? But as well as giving advice to the Prime Minister today, we've been asking for your pinch-yourself moments, the moments when you didn't even know or you couldn't believe that you were in there, you know, in that place at that time with these famous people or whatever it might be. Your pinch yourself moments. We've been talking about reunions because of my reunion on air with a neighbour that I hadn't seen for 23 years. Absolutely amazing. Got another hour of the programme to go. Don't get me wrong, this ain't the end of it. We'll have newscasts for you in a moment or two, and that'll be fascinating, no doubt.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 4 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. Figures obtained by BBC News show the number of times machetes, swords and so-called zombie knives have been logged by police has almost doubled in the last 5 years. From tomorrow, it'll be illegal to possess zombie-style knives and machetes in England and Wales, as a knife amnesty in place for people to surrender the weapons without prosecution comes to an end. Pooja Kanda's son, Ronan, was murdered in a case of mistaken identity in June 2022. She wants the online sale of all big knives to be banned.
I'm shocked they were available when this happened to my child. And I'm more shocked that they are still continuing to be available after what happened to Ronan. And I can't have that happen to another child. I just can't.
Rachel Reeves will use her first Labour conference speech as Chancellor to try to persuade her critics that there won't be a return to austerity. She will promise an October budget of real ambition and say her optimism for Britain is as strong as ever. But her key message is risks being overshadowed by questions about party donations and criticism over the decision to means test winter fuel payments. The business secretary, Jonathan Reynolds, has insisted Labour wants to bring back hope to Britain.
What the Chancellor will want to be getting across is the good times that we want to bring, the hope for the future. Look, sometimes you've got to make difficult decisions early on to give the stability. You don't want to repeat the disaster of Liz Truss, for instance. Where there's got to be a tough decision, it's for a purpose, and it is that better future. But yes, we want people to be better off. We want hope to return to Britain. And that's a message of change beginning. But that is why we've had to make those difficult decisions.
The UN has warned the Middle East is on the brink of imminent catastrophe amid fears of an all-out war. Fighting between Israel and the Iran-backed group Hezbollah in Lebanon intensified over the weekend, with both sides carrying out large cross-border strikes. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has promised further action unless Hezbollah backs down. New analysis of government data suggests on average more than 50 pubs a month have closed.